Next topic is about question S3, alignment with IFRS 9 financial instruments. I think it might be the most excited topic today. So Joseph, I think the floor is yours.
Thank you, Jinchao. Hi, everybody. So as Jinchao says, the next topic is S3 in the request for information on IFRS 9 financial instruments. Question S3 asks for views on three topics of IFRS 9 and other topics on application issues. To facilitate the running of the session, we will discuss each topic separately. The first main topic is classification and measurement of financial assets, and the RFI asks for views on supplementing the list of examples in Section 11, Basic Financial Instruments, with a principle for classifying financial assets based on their contractual cash flow characteristics. Adding this principle would ease application by providing a clear rationale for classifying financial assets and thereby measuring them either at amortized cost or fair value. This would assist entities in the circumstance in which a financial asset does not match the characteristics in any of the examples in Section 11. Many respondents in the comment letter, online survey and outreach agreed with this proposal and the board's reasoning for adding the supplementary principle for classification of financial assets. Some respondents made some suggestions with regard to introducing the contractual cash flow characteristics principle, and these are outlined in paragraph 51 of Agenda Paper 2. In the light of the feedback on the RFI, the staff think the SMIG should propose to the board the introduction of the supplementary principle in Section 11. I would now hand over to SMIG members for discussion.
Thanks, Joseph. So now let's discuss the first topic about the constructual characteristics, whether we should introduce or not. Yeah. Any comments on this topic?
There's no way.
Edison.
I think.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. So I strongly support the staff view that.
It seems I cannot hear you.
Jinchao, I think that is a general problem because I at least in my screen here, many people are frozen.
Yes.
Yes, I also think it's a general problem.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I can hear.
Yeah, some are frozen here also.
Yeah, same here.
Even Brazil is frozen. I can't believe it.
Because the rain, Tadeu.
Might be.
Is it raining?
Yes. Simon, do you know what's the reason?
I'm sorry, Jinchao, I really don't. Unfortunately, it's not a problem. Some people are on and working quite happily, but obviously a lot of them aren't.
Simon, despite we have the audio, the image are frozen, and this is a general problem that seems to be.
Yeah, I think we can try. If Anderson, can you speak? I hope everyone can hear you.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm back. Sorry. So I don't know what happened. So I was telling that I strongly support the staff view that supplementing the list of examples in section 11 with a principle would, of course, provide a better and a very clear rationale for classifying financial instruments and thereby measuring then either at amortized cost or fair value. I think that using a principle based on contractual cash flows will truly assist the entities in situations where financial instruments do not match the characteristic of any of the examples given in section 11. So I think that including a principle would help a lot.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Anderson, very good comments. Andrea?
Yes, I do agree with the staff's position in terms of supplementing the, additional supplemental information. Also, it is my view that, the principle for classifying financial assets based on the contractual cash flow characteristics would definitely align with IFRS 9 and would provide a lot more guidance to individuals who are not clear with respect to whether or not, a particular financial instrument meets a particular classification. So I think that we should include it.
Thanks, Andrea. Daniel, please.
I think alignment is interesting, but I think anyways, classification according to IFRS 9 could be a bit complicated for SMEs because it would imply a greater use of fair value, which in the current version is rather restricted in financial instrument that SMEs have.
Thanks, Daniel. Raymond.
Thank you. We agree with the alignment of the classification of financial asset rules that the staff are thinking about. And I think what's important for us, and certainly where we've seen some lessons learnt in the application of IFRS 9, is that because there's a principle based approach to the classification of the various financial assets, it makes it a lot easier for the users of financial statements, or for the preparers, users, everybody who's involved in the process to understand what is being meant. And I think to translate that into the SME space would be a significant help, especially for those people that have up until now been battling to try and understand what financial instruments they've got on their balance sheets. And we find there's a lot of people that are not always going to be financially literate that are using the financial statements or placing reliance on the financial statements. And the easier the thinking is that underpins the accounting, the easier it is for them to understand what it is that they're dealing with. Thank you.
Thanks, Raymond. Very good comment. Billing, please.
Thank you, Chen Xia. I have no objection to supplementing the list examples with a principle of classifying the financial asset based on the contractual cash flow, provided the existing list of conditions as set out in paragraph 11.9 of the IFRS for SME standard are retained. Because applying the list of conditions in this paragraph is largely consistent with the outcome of applying the IFRS 9 principle-based approach. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy. So, can you mention again which paragraph you mentioned the question about the paragraph?
Paragraph 11.9.
11.9, okay. Yeah. Thank you. I'm not sure whether the staff want to respond or not with regards to this paragraph. Yeah, but let's. Yeah.
Yes, so the objective is to retain that paragraph because the whole idea of bringing in the contractual cash flow characteristic is to supplement that list.
Thanks, Joseph. Carmen, please.
Thank you. I think adding in the principle to supplement what's there will, I agree with the other comments that have been made, I think it will be really helpful to anyone who's using this and anyone who's using financials that are prepared with this.
Thanks, Carmen. Ayodhala.
Yeah, thank you. I support the board to supplement the list of examples in section 11 with a principle for classifying financial assets based on their contractual cash flow characteristics to help and guide the entities in such circumstances in which the financial asset does not match the criteria described in any of the example in section 11. However, there are concerns that were raised possibly in my constituent, and that there should be an option to use the fair value through profit or loss for basic financial instruments subject to some simplified business model test. That is, what that means is to permit, but not to require the use of fair value through profit or loss in cases in which it is more representative of the entity's business model. And what does that mean? For example, if an entity holds debt instruments for the purposes of trading, then it should be permitted to hold them at fair value through profit or loss. And for the impairment, the alignment, the view to align the IFRS for semi-standard will simplify approach to the impairment. I think I support the board on introducing the simplified approach into the IFRS for SME standard, which I believe also align with the impairment requirement in the IFRS 9. I also think, the suggestion we have is considering additional simplification, that is for such alignment. And this is using a best estimate approach to estimate a lifetime expected losses rather than a weighted probability of a range of possible outcome approach. So that's my comment for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Ayodhala. I think your comments is very clear. Thank you very much. Reinhard.
Yeah, thank you. I support the alignment. I think it introduces a good structure and discipline around it. I think we could draw on some of the lessons learned from implementing IFRS 9 over the past couple of years and potentially develop additional examples that might be helpful. I think in particular on the classification aspect, there's quite a bit of lessons learned in practice. I would second the notion that ECL, I think the concept itself under IFRS 9 offers sufficient flexibility for an easy to apply model. It should potentially be clarified by an example. And one way would be to use an example that refers to historical loss rates to form the basis for estimating future losses, which I think would be very intuitive and practical to apply for SMEs. But I think that there is sufficient flexibility within IFRS 9 as it stands to allow application at the SME level. Thank you.
Thanks, Reinhard. Lei. Lei, please, we cannot hear you. Lei, please. Okay. Yeah, Lei, I think we cannot hear you, so I think you are on mute, yeah. We still cannot hear you. maybe we can move on, and then I will ask you to comment later, okay? Yeah. Yosef, can you move on, and then I will ask Leil, you know, to comment later, okay? Yeah.
Thank you, Jinchao. So moving on to the second topic, the RFI asked for views on updating Section 11 with the simplified expected credit loss approach to the impairment of financial assets in IFRS 9. There were mixed views on this topic. Most stakeholders in the different methods we obtained feedback mentioned complexity of the simplified approach in IFRS 9 as a reason for not introducing the simplified expected credit loss approach in the IFRS for SMEs standard. Some specific concerns were raised during outreach, such as challenge for intercompany loans and balances, the need for guidance on forward-looking information. Other respondents in the comment letter were of the view that the board should wait until the completion of the post-implementation review of IFRS 9. In the light of the feedback on the RFI, the staff think the SMIC should recommend that the board carry out additional work to understand the practical challenges entities faced or are facing in implementing or applying the simplified expected credit loss approach to decide on whether to propose aligning the IFRS for SMEs standard with the simplified approach. I would now hand over to SMIC members for discussion.
Thanks, Yosef. Yeah, this is, I think, one of the most exciting topic about the impairments test and impairment test methodology. So I'm looking forward to your comments. Andrea? Andrea?
Sorry about that, I was on mute. Yes, I do agree with the board's recommendation to defer on and get some additional information and provide guidance, because in my part of the world, most entities are struggling with the application of the simplified approach. And I think that some guidance in that area would be very helpful. In most cases, you find such varying applications that one is not sure as to whether or not which entities are applying the concepts properly. So definitely some more work is needed in that area.
Thanks, Andrea. Billy.
Thank you, Chen Chiao. In line with simplified standard for SME, our constituents believe that the IFRS for SME should retain the current, the existing current loss model instead of moving to a simplified expected credit loss model.
Thank you. Very clear point. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. I'm supporting what the staff has proposed to defer the process so that they get more information on the applicability of what you are discussing. Because in practice, IFRS 9 is still confusing, it's complex, and it's complex for those who know how to apply. Now, if you take the same simplified model to SMEs, I think we might impose burdens to them instead of helping them. For to me, I think we have to work on them first to get the insight on how they are applying them. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. Carmen.
Thank you. Whilst I acknowledge that the simplified model is simpler than the other model within IFRS 9, I agree with a number of the comments that have been made that it's certainly not simple, and therefore I support doing more research into the practical implications of this for these entities that we're talking about. I wouldn't want to wait until a PIR of IFRS 9, but certainly I would support doing some more research into this.
Thanks, comments. Yes, some feedback we got that applying simplified expected credit loss may not be simple for SME. For certain. Anderson, please.
So thanks. So in respect of the impairment of financial assets, I also support and agree with the suggestion to carry out additional work to understand what was the practical challenges. So I read some responses and I agree with the concerns of some respondents about the complexity of the simplified expected credit loss model in IFRS 9. So I understand that we should try, we should think in a further simplification of the simplified approach. So that's my view. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Okay. Daniel.
I agree with you, Yichao. I think that expected loss approach, even the simplified one, can be too complex for SMEs because it includes calculation factors that are more demanding than the incurred cost loss. Sorry. In my opinion, this would go against this simplification.
Thanks, Daniel. Jenny.
Thanks. Yes, I was going to say I would support looking at alignment with the simplified approach in IFRS 9, but I do agree with the staff recommendation that a bit more work needs to be done to identify what the practical challenges with that might be and whether there are further simplifications that would be appropriate in the context of this population.
Thanks, Jenny. I think the system come back to be normal. Good, that's good. Leigh, do you want to come back? Because we lost the contact with you. Yeah, Leigh, please. No, we still cannot hear you. Can you try again? Yeah. Can you speak anything? Speak again. Oh, I think we still cannot hear you. Okay. Let's try later. Okay. Yeah. Rakesh, please.
Hi, the respondents in this jurisdiction believe that the simplified model can be adopted, but still believes that there are problems in practice currently and would like to explore some additional options or further simplification before adopting.
Okay, thank you. Joseph, I think we got what we needed, yeah?
Yes, yeah. Thank you. So we're going to move on to the third main topic, which is hedge accounting. And on this topic, the RFI asks for views on three options. First, removing the requirements on hedge accounting in Section 12 for other financial instrument issues. Second, retaining the requirements on hedge accounting in Section 12. And third, aligning the requirements on hedge accounting in Section 12 with IFRS 9. Overall, stakeholders support retaining the requirements on hedge accounting in Section 12 because it is well understood and adequate. Overall, there is mixed views on whether to update the requirements in Section 12 for hedge accounting to align with IFRS 9. In the light of the feedback on the RFI, the staff think that the SMIC should propose to the board retaining hedge accounting requirements in Section 12. I would now hand over to SMIC members for discussion and ask for your views on the mixed response to updating the hedge accounting requirements to align with IFRS 9.
Thanks, Joseph. Any comments or questions on hedging accounting? Reinhard.
Yeah, thank you. I think IFRS 9 hedge accounting model is actually easier to apply. So I would think that it would make sense to go down that route. Not allowing hedge accounting altogether would force them all to just live with all the volatility in P&L. I mean, they can opt to do so. But I thought the IFRS 9 hedge accounting model is easier to apply in practice than the traditional 39 model. So I would suggest to move.
Thanks, Reinhard. Ayodhya.
Yes, thank you. As for me, I think I will agree that section 12 should include requirement on hedge accounting. I will also support retaining the current section 12 requirement for hedge accounting without any alignment with IFRS 9. However, there is the suggestion we have from my end, and the suggestion is giving SMEs an option to apply the full IFRS 9 hedge accounting rules without having to adopt IFRS 9 in full. And we have this recommendation that we recommend that this matter should be revisited again in the next comprehensive review of IFRS for SME standard. Thank you.
Thanks, Ayoda. Edison.
Thank you again. So sorry, but at this time I will play the opposite side. So in contrast with the staff recommendation, based on the jurisdictions where I live, so in Brazil, so hedging transactions are not common among SME entities or SME. So sorry, and I do not see the need to retain it on the IFRS for SME. So I'm with the view that we should keep IFRS for SME as simple as possible, and in an event that such transactions take place in a SME, so a SME would SME would like to use hedge account, so they can apply it using section 10, paragraph 4 of IFRS for SME, which states that in the absence of the accounting practice, they can use IFRS full as benchmark. So that's my view. I think that we should keep as simple as possible, because at least where I live, so it's not a common transaction for SME agents.
Thanks, Anderson. Very good comment. And Jenny.
Thanks. Yes, actually, I wanted to agree with Reinhard that I think that, well, I would agree with keeping hedge accounting, but I think alignment to some extent with IFRS 9 presents a possible opportunity to simplify the requirements and make them more cost effective. And even though I see the feedback that a lot of people say the current requirements are well understood and working, but if we can make them a bit simpler and easier to apply, that would seem to be a benefit. Thanks.
Thanks, Jenny. Una.
Yes, well, I would support what Jenny said, although I wondered whether leaving what's there at the moment untouched in Section 11 and 12, that people understand it and are able to apply it at the moment, mightn't be better with a cross-reference out to permit the adoption of IFRS 9, because certainly in some circumstances it does simplify, and it also expands the areas in which hedge accounting can be applied. So, but without forcing people to adopt IFRS 9 in full, just the hedge accounting requirements.
Thanks, Una. Peter.
When referring back, the intention of issuing IFRS for SMEs was to make them simple so that it can be well understood by SMEs. I think that the essence of having IFRS for SMEs. To me, I'm of the opinion that we retain the hedge accounting requirements as they are in Section 12. If to date, no problem which has been noticed of that. You know, the danger of trying to align everything with the full IFRS, there is the possibility of making IFRS for SMEs also to be complex. So I think it's right to retain a hedging account as it is now. In case you have any complex issue, then you go and refer to the full IFRS. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. Sefula.
Thank you. I think a very limited number of SMEs have such arrangement. So I agree with one of the colleagues that this requirement should be removed from the Section 12. And if any SME is using have such hedge arrangement, they should refer to the guidance available in IFRS, the full IFRS. Thank you.
Thank you, Safra. Lei, I think we can try again.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Perfect. Yes, good.
Okay, thank you. I can try. Sorry, everyone. So I think for the hydro accounting, so I don't believe that requirements on hydro accounting are necessary, personally. I believe that the requirements on hydro accounting are complicated. So if related business does exist, so it would reach the same outcome through the recognition and the measurement of other financial instruments. So, I mean, for SMEs, probably it's not common business. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lei. Do you want to comment again with regard to the impairment and the first topic as well? Do you want to comment again?
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So for the first topic, actually, I think because as planned, IFRS 9 will be subjected to a post-implementation review this year, the second half of this year. So I'm considering is that possible? So we can to discuss this topic after the after the PIR, is that possible? So for first topic, for second one, so you know, theory from the theory, so it's very, you know, it's very perfect, you know, modeling for the impairment, but actually from a practical, it's very difficult to implement. So personally, I don't agree that the impairment to align with the IFRS, whatever simplification or not. Thank you.
Thanks, Lei. So I think we can move on to the fallback issue. Yosef.
Yes, thank you, Jinchao. So moving on to the other topics of IFRS 9. Overall, stakeholders support updating to IFRS 9, the fallback to IAS 39 in Section 11 for the recognition and measurement of financial instrument, referred to as the fallback to IAS 39. Only some respondents in the comment letter and 7 out of 15 respondents to the online survey mentioned that they were aware of entities that opt for the fallback, with the main reason given was SMEs that are subsidiaries are the most common to opt for the fallback to IAS 39. On the last topic, issued financial guarantee contracts, overall stakeholders agreed on introducing the definition of a financial guarantee contract from IFRS 9 to the IFRS for SMEs standards. Whilst 11 out of 14 respondents to the online survey agreed with aligning the requirements in the IFRS for SMEs standards for issued financial guarantee contracts with IFRS 9, some respondents in the comment letter are of the view that an entity can apply the requirements of Section 21, provisions and contingencies, to its financial guarantee contracts for simplicity reasons. Some stakeholders who engaged during the consultation also said that the requirement should be simpler. In the light of the feedback on the RFI, the staff think the SMIC should propose to the board the introduction of the definition of financial guarantee contract from IFRS 9. On aligning the requirements in the IFRS for SMEs standard for issued financial guarantee contracts with IFRS 9, the staff think the SMIC should recommend that the board carry further research. I would now hand over to the SMIC members for discussion, and particularly for your views on why Section 21 could be applied to issued financial guarantee contracts. Thank you.
Thanks, Yosef. Any comments? Billing, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Chen Qiao. I still agree that when this issue was raised to the SMIC, Q&A was raised, was published, and I think during then the SMIC also agreed with the conclusion reached, but then also recommended that the ISB to revisit the accounting treatment for this issued financial guarantee contract during the second comprehensive review with a view of to providing measurement relief. So because I actually submitted the issue, I still stand by it that I think there should be some form of measurement relief. So what's the proposal? I do agree for simplification. I believe that in practice it's much easier to apply Section 21 instead of Section 12. And I think maybe this Jenny can confirm. I think the UK FRS 102, if I'm not mistaken, is paragraph 21.1A actually prescribe the actually include in the scope corporate guarantees into that section on provisions. So in short, I still stand by the SMIC recommendation earlier when the Q&A was issued, as well as for the ISB to consider for simplification purpose to apply Section 21 instead of Section 12. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy. Raymond.
Just to add on to what Biling said, I think when we had the conversation around the application of the financial guarantee contracts, and the paper was initially, this is maybe going back about a year, 18 months, maybe even longer than that now, I think the concern that was raised then was the SME standards seemed to have a lot more onerous requirements in the application, in the accounting for guarantees, for financial guarantees, than even full IFRS has. And it certainly was not very clear as to what it is that we should be doing. And I think the thinking at the time for everybody who, by people that contributed, was that it would probably be easier to apply the requirements of Section 21 than it would be to apply the requirements of Section 12, certainly from a cost-benefit perspective as well, because I think the one would then require that one goes and does a fair valuation and all sorts of other steps that would need to be followed. So in my mind, applying Section 21 would probably be easier. So I think I would agree with the recommendation that the staff have made, that a little bit more work be done in assessing, in exploring what the impact of application of Section 21, how the application of Section 21 might resolve the issue, and maybe to have a look to see what other standard setters around the world who may have tackled the same issue might be doing. But in my mind, this is a big issue in this space, because a lot of entities that are in the space find themselves in a situation where they have to give financial guarantees in order for any loans to be put in place. And that will need to be accounted for. So it is a big deal in this space. Thank you.
Thanks, Raymond. I think we got very clear comments, clear points. Yeah. Any other comments on those two topics? One is financial guarantee and another is fallback. Please. Lei, please. Lei, are you on mute?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I agree with that addition of the definition of the financial guarantee contract. So because, you know, if we look at the IFIs for SMEs, the current measurement for the financial guarantee contract, which request for both the beginning and the end of the period using the fair value. But for the IFRS 9, now it's only requested at the beginning for the fair value. So from the practically, so now the IFRS 9 is is simple. It's simple than the RFIS for SMEs. So I agree that to align with RFIS 9 or more either you know simple the print simple for the definition and the accounting treatment. Thank you.
Thanks, Lei. Daniel.
Of course, I support the fallback to IFRS 9 for financial instruments. But about financial guarantees, we have discussed this topic before in this group, so I think we all agree about to simplify the treatment of this issue. And of course, right now, applying Section 12, it could be more complicated than for a full IFRS. So I support the point of view of the staff. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Michelle Fisher and then Ayodala.
Thank you. I am of the view that the definition of a financial guarantee contract from to be the added to IFRS 9. I'm sorry, from IFRS 9 should be added to IFRS for SME standard. And having supported the principle of simplicity for IFRS for SME standard, I think I will also support aligning the requirements in the IFRS for SME standard for issued financial guarantee contract with IFRS 9, which I believe this will eliminate the complexity that is currently being expressed, especially in Section 12. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle Fisher, do you want to comment? Michelle? I think this is not the case of Marta, please. Yeah.
Hi. I really like the possibility of further simplifying of the IFRS for SME and the possibility of using the IFRS standard in the case of IFRS 9. But allow me to make an additional comment. I believe that this possibility of simplifying IFRS for SME could also be a practical solution in other situations. As Tadeu Sendon rightly pointed out, the universe of companies that apply IFRS for SME is very varied in terms of size and complexity. If you make this standard too complex, small companies will find it difficult to apply it. On the other hand, if you do not consider items such as the discussed points of alignment IFRS 9 and 10, companies with greater complexity or within a group of companies whose parent company is a large company will have no incentive to apply it. Thus, it seems more appropriate that complex operations such as investment entities, guarantee contracts, head account are not dealt with in IFRS for SME. This would suit small business in terms of size and allow complexity. However, as long as there was a possibility that companies with greater complexity could apply the IFRS standard in more cases than the only one current currency in relation to IFRS 9. Thank you.
Thanks, Marta. There is another SMIG members want to comment, but I cannot see the name. Could you comment?
Hello, it's Michelle.
Oh, Michelle, okay.
Michelle, yeah. I'm not sure if it's me, but I had a comment, but I lost connection earlier.
Yeah, thank you. Good. I
was just going to ask a question to the staff about the fallback to IFRS 9. And is the intention, is there preliminary thought that the fallback to IS 39 would be updated to IFRS 9, even if IFRS 9 is incorporated in the standard during this review?
Joseph, do you want to respond?
Yes. So the RFI 6 views about updating the IFRS, the fallback to IAS 39 to IFRS 9. But to your question, I think we did not think about, we have to think about the other aspect, but I think we would update the fallback to IFRS 9 in general.
Because I raised the question, sorry.
Michelle, go ahead.
Yes.
Sorry, I raised the question because during development of the standard, a special case was made for IS 39 to allow SMEs to continue using the options in IS 39 pending completion of IFRS 9 and IFRS 9 being considered for SMEs. And my understanding of the ISB's intention at the last review was once that IFRS 9 is considered for incorporation, its intention has always been to remove the only fallback to full IFRS completely. So not have a fallback at all to full IFRS, to be consistent with the original objective of the standard, to have a standalone standard for SMEs.
Yes. So the feedback that we got is people were more overall, the feedback that we got is to retain the fallback to IFRS 9.
Thank you. Peter.
Thank you. To me, what I have noticed is that how to account for financial guarantee contracts as it is in IFRS for SMEs is a bit difficult compared to how to account for financial guarantee contracts and IFRS 9. So the opinion is we have to align with the IFRS 9. But let me support what Marta said. For IFRS for SMEs, to be useful to these businesses which lack accountability. I think we should avoid to have complex issues. So whenever we find things are complex, we might advise to leave them out so that when an entity have a complex issue, have to refer full IFRS, so that users of IFRS SMEs can have a usable and a supportable instrument which can assist them to provide information that present and reflect a truth and faithful presented information. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. So now I think we are a little behind the schedule, Josef, do you want to say something? I think it's a very good discussion here.
Yes. I think we got some very good discussion, especially on the financial guarantee contract. So we'll take that to the board.
Okay, thank you. So now we are going to close this session. We are going to have a break. I suppose we only have 5 minutes break. Can we come back in 5 minutes? So that is 12 past 12, okay? Okay, see you. 12 past 12, London time.